now not Gideon. The reason I went ahead and pretended to be Gideon for a bit was there's obviously an awful lot in that. And in some ways, I thought it'd be useful to actually see roughly what's going on in certain bits. So in this, there were three conflicts that we can see. There's an awful lot in that passage. It's obviously a very long passage. But every day, we have to deal with conflict of some form. Could be on a national level. So like ISIS at the moment, there's a lot of conflict regarding that. Could be closer to home, as we've just spoken about earlier on, the referendum. There were riots in the city centre afterwards. So there's conflict at all times. Or, if you're anything like myself, then maybe this morning you argued with your spouse about who's going to do what bits at what time. No? Just me? Okay. Maybe a bit too much information now. But at this point, we could see that Gideon's heart is beginning to wander away from the Lord. See, God provided a magnificent win. He provided a win of 300 people against an entire army. But Gideon at this point was beginning to look for his own personal glory. Today, we're going to look at three different types of conflict that we see through this passage. And we're going to look at Jesus. It's a bit of the Sunday school answer. We're going to look at Jesus for certain principles of how to actually deal with some of these conflicts. So the first one is conflict avoidance. And I should probably add in the words there, needless conflict avoidance. There are some conflicts which can be avoided. It's not actually something which is necessary. So we see here that the Ephraimites started complaining, and he avoids them by asking a question. Now, we can relate to that in some ways, because there'll be many times where we've obeyed God, we've done what we're meant to do, and somebody will come up and say, "Oh, but you haven't done it the way I want," or "You haven't done it like you didn't involve me," or something along those lines. And in these times, not much you can do, but what you can do is you can relate to, we've done what it is we're meant to do, but if we use wisdom, we can work out a way of avoiding this conflict. So how do we do that? This year, we've been looking at the learning circle. There's six up there, and all of the studious people will be able to remember the other four. But the first two aspects are when we recognize a situation which could end in a conflict, and it doesn't need to, we could work out a way that we don't actually need a conflict here. You have to first of all observe what actually happened. So the first question is what? So we say, okay, what is it? I'm saying this. What is it you're hearing? So for example, I might be saying something, the other person might be hearing it slightly differently. So we observe and we go, what is it that's happening? Then we ask why. So if you're hearing sort of judgmentality, or you're hearing jealousy, or you're hearing that I'm trying to condemn you in some way, then you ask, why is it you're hearing that? So this is simple questions that we can ask to actually work out a way of avoiding an unnecessary conflict. Now we can see this in Jesus as well. He was very rabbinical in his teaching. So he always, very often, he would answer a question by asking another question. For example, the chief priests, they asked him about his authority. And he answered, well, John the Baptist, was it of heaven or was it of man? So he actually avoided that conflict, avoided the situation itself by asking a separate question. That's conflict avoidance itself. Now this can be essential between, like say, colleagues. We're trying to build a discipling community. So we're trying to therefore work out how do we disciple one another. So it can be essential between colleagues, also be essential between friends, and it can be very essential between spouses, or spouse-I, or spice, whatever the the plural of spouses is. But now, if that's what's happened, a wise man will be able to sidestep unnecessary conflict. What happens when, like Gideon, he's actually in a situation where there is a conflict? Now, again, Gideon's heart at this point is definitely walking away from the Lord, so we're not looking to how he dealt with a conflict, because I don't really advise that for many people. But instead, what we do is we look at certain aspects of what Jesus said about how do we resolve conflict. So, next slide. There we go. So first of all, Jesus said an awful lot about resolving conflict and about conflict and unforgiveness and these things. First bit he says here is, therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them. Then come and offer your gift. So we're going to speak about that a little bit later as well. But there's two bits here which I want to pick up on. One is that he wants us to deal with it quickly. If there's been a conflict, don't let it fester. Go sort it out quickly. And the second one is that there's clearly, because you're offering a gift at the altar, there's clearly spiritual ramifications for when we don't actually resolve conflicts in the right way. Second part is, now this was too long a verse to actually put everything in, but most of you know this anyway, and it's talking about when we actually, if a brother or sister has sinned against you, then, if a brother or sister has sinned against you, then you go confront that person one on one. So it doesn't mean you go gossip behind their back. It doesn't mean you take forever to actually talk about it. It doesn't mean that you bring along 10 friends and then pounce on them or anything like that. It means you go speak to that person one on one. If that doesn't work, then you bring along a wise and unbiased friend. Or it doesn't necessarily even need to be one of your friends. The key thing here is it has to be somebody who's unbiased. So it's not two on one trying to convince them that they're wrong. That's not what it's about. And then after that, if that doesn't work, then you go to the church. So that's a principle that he gives there. And then in Ephesians 4:15, admittedly, this is Paul, it's not Jesus, but he's inspired by the Holy Spirit, so I think we're okay. And he says, speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become the mature body of him who is the head, that is Christ. Now, speaking the truth in love, the way I like to see that is, you've got like a little capsule of truth, or a little seed, if you will, of truth. And it's in love, so it's entirely surrounded by love. So you're sharing something truthful, and Jesus said that your word is truth. So talking about the Bible, he says that your word is truth at certain points as well. You're saying something very truthful and accurate, but it's surrounded by love. And this brings up one of the most important parts, is that actually we are confronting sin, or we're trying to get rid of this conflict, we're trying to deal with this conflict because we love the other person. We want to see them achieve their potential. Basically, life should be blessed. We should be living our lives in a blessed plane up here. And the reason that we actually conflict, that we're trying to confront the conflict, is because when our lives are stopping being blessed and they're coming down here somewhere, that's why we're actually going against these things. Okay? So is there any principles that Jesus gives for how to actually resolve it? So he's given us principles for certain aspects there. What about when you go up to somebody and you want to actually resolve this conflict? Does he give us any principles? Now, while I was studying Revelation, next slide, while studying Revelation recently, this is a pattern which I saw. Now, I don't necessarily say that you have to take this. This is something which I found useful for myself. The pattern of if Jesus himself, he spoke to seven different churches through the Revelation, and he spoke about correction, he corrected certain things, done certain things, but there's a pattern. If you put all of seven next to each other, then you would see this certain pattern of five things which are said through pretty much all of them. And this pattern is also something which I'm going to hand out, I hope. Oh, it's over here. I'm going to very quickly hand this out. So we have some nice little A5 things here, which are very easy to fold and put in your wallet or keep with you. As I say, you don't have to take it if you don't want to, but I find that it's a very useful way, and I'll go through it in just a second, a very useful way to work out how to actually confront situations. So needs, you can just fold them, and then at a time where there is a conflict, when there has been some sort of situation, we have a pattern for how to actually resolve this. So each one, the first part is affection. So in some ways you could say affection affirmation. So you're letting the person know how much you love them. Do you actually care about them? Do you want their life to be up here? You want their life to be at a blessed place. So the first part is that you're sharing with them how important it is to you that their life is living in that way. Second part is approval. So that's, if you will, calling out the gold. You're stating the things that they do and they have done really well. So it's looking at, say, skills, it could be looking at character, it could be looking at personality. You're calling out the gold in their lives. So this is something which Jesus does, as I say, with all of the churches in Revelation, and how characteristic of Jesus that he would actually approve of things before he brings criticism. So I also don't want that word to sound too harsh or anything, it's just an easy word to put in there. But this is where we actually resolve the conflict, where we actually look at what actually happened and why did that happen. So again, we're looking at the observation, we're looking at the reflection. So in this part, you're again speaking truth, but you're speaking it surrounded in love. One on one, as I say, all of the principles that Jesus gives us. But then we don't just leave the person there either. We don't just say, oh, I really love you, and you're good at this, but you've done this wrong. The end. That's kind of leaving them high and dry. We don't do that. You then give them advice as well. The part of advice is we actually say, look, this has happened. This is how I got hurt. I got hurt because I heard you say this, but you said it in such a way that actually I got hurt. So you give them advice of, maybe in the future, if you share that in a slightly different way, I wouldn't get hurt. Other people may not get hurt. You've given them advice. And then the final part is hope. Is that you're helping them to recognize, okay, well, if in the future you apply that principle, then that means in the future, the other person, they may not get hurt, for example. And you're giving them hope that actually their life again will get back to this high level of being blessed. Their life again will, their relationship with God will become much stronger. Their relationship with others will become much stronger. And their relationship with themselves as well. Because there's nothing worse than the torment of guilt for feeling that we've done stuff wrong all of the time. Our relationship with self suddenly gets eroded. So that is a very brief sort of summation of a way that I've seen how Jesus dealt with all of the different churches, and a pattern, if you will, of how to actually overcome conflict. Okay, so we've looked at certain times we'll need to avoid conflict, right? And we need the wisdom to recognize in these situations there's going to be a conflict if I don't actually avoid this in some way, and it's unnecessary. Because not all conflict is, there's some conflict which is necessary because then you can get over the situation, but there are some conflicts which are unnecessary. So we can avoid certain conflicts, but if there is a conflict, we have patterns for how to actually resolve this. But now the third part, and I'd say we found that through how Gideon dealt with that as well. Well, not how he dealt with it, but he actually was involved in that conflict itself. But the third part is something else that we look at, which is the final conflict of Gideon here. See, Gideon chased after two Midianite kings. He chased after people with horrible names that Claire pronounced and I'm never even going to try. He chased after those two kings. But again, that's what happened. But why? Why did he chase after those two kings? He went out of his way. His men were knackered. Why did he go out of his way to chase after these two kings? Now, it was, to a certain extent, it was for personal glory. And this is why, as I say, his heart was beginning to turn away from God. But also, it was down to the unresolved bitterness that grew up through a previous conflict. So there can be, like in this situation, for example, his brothers and sisters, or possibly his brothers, had been killed by the two kings of Gideon. And he did not resolve in his heart the bitterness that had built up from that conflict. Now, there's another part here which I think is very important, actually. In the text, it says, that he hit them with thorns and briers. Now, briers, the word, in some translations, it'll say briers, but actually it's the same as thistles. Now, thorns and thistles are mentioned all the way through the Bible in different ways. They're spoken in a lot of the prophets. It's mentioned in Hebrews. And at the crucifixion, Jesus had a purple robe, which is the color of thorns, but he also had, no, sorry, the color of thistles, but he also had a crown of thistles, as well, of thorns as well. Sorry for getting those down the wrong way. See, but the first time that thorns and thistles were seen in the Bible was actually in Genesis 3, which we'll bring up in just a second. There you go. And you see, this is a principle as well, that the first time that something is mentioned in the Bible is very often a very significant time. And it says here, just after the fall, after sin had first entered into the world, this is God pronouncing this. He says, cursed is the ground because of you. It will produce thorns and thistles for you. So thorns and thistles, all the way through the Bible, very often when they're put together as a coupling like that, it relates to curses. Now, as we say, our life is meant to be blessed. We are to live our life up here on a blessed level. Before the fall, Adam and Eve, they walked in perfect relationship with God. They were in perfect relationship with him. They lived their lives up here, perfectly relating to God and perfectly blessed. After the fall, sin entered, and all of a sudden, their lives went away from being blessed. The opposite of being blessed is obviously being cursed. And when, so our lives are now down here. They were down there because sin had entered. This is what Jesus came into the world to do. He came in to forgive the sins, to be able to provide a way for sins to be forgiven, but to get us to be able to relate to God again and to get our lives back up here. And this is where we should be living. However, as it says with thorns and thistles, one of the aspects of Matthew 18 that we just spoke about at the bottom here says, "Truly I tell you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." Now that terminology, this is obviously, as I say, talking about when Jesus is talking about how we confront situations and how we actually deal with sins in this, and how we deal with conflicts generally. In this situation, have you ever tried walking with your shoelaces bound together? Not good. Not good whatsoever. And see, when we don't actually deal with situations, when we don't actually forgive in our hearts, then we are being bound. We're being tied up. We're not. Have you ever tried walking or running or ministering when you're bound and your shoelaces are tied together? When we still have this in our heart, keeping us down, it's keeping us bound. And that's not living the level that Jesus wants us to live at. It's not living a blessed level. So we have to forgive. So that was a very brief summation of the importance of conflict resolution, if you will. And there are certain parts where we can avoid conflict if we can recognize it wisely. But when we have to actually deal with a conflict, we now have pieces of paper to actually fold up into our wallets and be able to look at and work out, okay, this is a situation, needs resolving. That's the end of the actual message. But the thing is that God doesn't actually just prepare a message. I mean, Jesus is the message. What he actually does is he prepares a messenger. So God's been teaching me certain aspects of this over the last 3 or 4 weeks. In fact, probably longer. And there's one thing which will be quite difficult to share in some ways, but I feel that God wants me to share because he's been preparing me as the messenger preparing for this. Recently at a learning community, we had, at the end of a learning community, me, Alan, and Shona were over in Edinburgh. And at that place, we always have a report out, so you're talking for 2 minutes about what it is that we've discussed as a church, things like that, what it is that our futures are. And then after that, you have a chance where people can come and pray and prophesy over you. One lady who, I have no idea who she was, because there's about 20 or 30 people praying and prophesying over you. One person put their hand on my shoulder, and they started praying and prophesying over myself. And what she prophesied was very accurate, just said, "I'm a man after God's own heart," a few other things. But then just afterwards also said, "There's something holding you back. There's something holding you back." And I could recognize in my heart, I could feel that God was already speaking to me about something. He was saying, "Let's go sort some stuff out." So one of the things that we do as a church here is we do things called sozos, or sorcerers now it's called. I personally think because it's ran by Shona, it should be a shozo, but apparently not. But so I went along and I booked myself in for one of these. I didn't know what it was that God was saying to me, but I felt it was something about my past, about conflict resolution, and about the kind of way that I've actually dealt with things in the past, I guess. And during this shozo session, one of the aspects is that you ask God to take you back to a memory, something that needs healed. And God took me back to a memory. And I saw a little wee boy, about this size. I was 3 at the time, probably not much smaller than I am now, because I'm not exactly the most tall of people. But this young boy, he was hiding behind a plant. Like there was a big plant. Well, I'm thinking a big plant. It was probably a normal-sized plant. And he didn't know why he was, like, I didn't know why he was hiding. I could just see that I was hiding there, and I could tell that was one of my memories. I was like, okay, why am I hiding there? And the thing was that there was actually violence going on in my house. I was very, very young at the time. As I say, I was about 3 or so. And there was a conflict. I'm not even sure if a conflict is the right word. There was a fight going on between my mother and my father. And I was in this memory, I was in this emotion, and I was seeing this. And then the next thing that I see is that I actually went up to my father's leg and tried pulling him like this. I was trying to stop him. I was like, "What?" Like, obviously, as a young kid, I didn't have the terminology for it, but I was like, "What are you doing? Stop. Stop this." And I realized through the saucer session, if you will, it came out that I had actually basically cursed myself, if you will, put a pronouncement upon myself, and I said, "I will no longer be a man who has that type of power to be able to confront conflict in that way." Because all I'd seen in my life, I've seen destruction left, right, and center all the way through my life up until meeting Claire and then meeting Jesus. I saw destruction everywhere. All I'd saw was that when conflict was dealt with, it was dealt with badly. But that is an absolute lie. That is a complete lie. Because what actually happened was the small bits of conflict, the bitterness that had actually started in their hearts at the start, wasn't actually confronted in the right way, wasn't dealt with at the time. And instead, it built up and built up and built up. And that's a real danger. When we don't actually, when we have that bitterness in our hearts and we haven't forgiven and we haven't confronted things at the right time, that causes real danger. I've lived my entire life in fear, basically, of confronting conflicts, of dealing with situations. I've lived my entire life with my best friends. Very often, I've struggled to be as honest as I should be, because I've seen what happens when what I thought I'd saw was, if you deal with conflict, it's like this. That's not true. That's an absolute lie. What actually happens is, if you deal with conflict, then it never gets to that stage. And now, I've been pretty much as honest as anyone possibly can be. And I would love us if now, as a church, as I say, I've made a decision to never live my life in fear in that way, to never actually deal with conflicts in that way. As a church, I would love it if we stand together, not literally right now, but if we do stand together to actually deal with conflicts. There might have been hurt, somebody said something bad happened, something like that. And yeah, we probably do have an absolute right to be angry. It's like something happened and the other person done something wrong. But this is something which I learned from a preacher, is that God does a deal with us. We've got like 100 IOUs, you know. That person there, they've hurt us, and we've got 100 IOUs. You've done this wrong. But God, he's sitting up there. He's got 10,000, a million, billions of IOUs on us. And he says, you forgive that 100 IOUs, I'll forgive that 10,000 or that billion, however many you want to classify us. That's the type of church that I feel that we should be. That's the radical community that we should be. So in a second, we're going to have the worship leaders up here again to... we've just got to go into a place of worship. But just before we do that, if we look at the very final slide. Therefore, if you're offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them. Then come and offer your gift. What we're about to do is we're about to offer a gift at the altar. We're about to offer the gift of, if you're the sacrifice of praise from our lips. We're going to offer God the gift of worship. But before we do that, we're just going to have some nice quiet music on for a second so we can wait on God and we can really ask him, are there people that we need to forgive? Is there bitterness there? It's the first thing we're going to do. We're just going to wait on God, and however it is that he actually speaks to us, he communicates in different ways. It could be through pictures. Could be a name, just a thought of a name flashes past our mind. Could be a sensing that we get. We're just going to wait on God and ask, is there anybody? If there is, then we go ahead and we actually forgive that person. Then secondly, in a place of worship, the second part is we ask God, are there people that we need to be reconciled with? Are there conflicts that we have avoided negatively? Or are there conflicts which have escalated negatively that we need to actually deal with? And then over the next couple of weeks, I would advise you to go along and speak to the people. And the thing is, God has prepared this sermon for a very specific time. He's went ahead of us. If he does communicate with us, people that we have been in conflict with, and we now need to actually resolve this conflict, he will go ahead of us. He'll already be starting to say the same things to them. All we have to do is be a part of that 300 who just obey what God asks us to do. Just now, the first part is we're just going to wait on God and ask him, is there any bitterness? And then we're going to deal with it. We're just going to ask him to help us. And the second part is when we get into the place of worship, then we ask God, is there anybody that we need to pick?